This is Cave Scott Allen of otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode's being recorded on June 10, 2016. We are talking to serial repeat offender Matthew Podwasaki, who has been on the show many times. Welcome back, Matt.
Thanks.
And we're also talking to Eric Rozelle. So can you guys go ahead and introduce yourself, and then we'll dig in?
Sure. I'm Matt Podwasaki. I'm with the Partner Catalyst team, and we work on some of the hardest problems at Microsoft, doing open source and so forth. So currently working on porting React Native to Windows.
Yeah, and I'm Eric Rozelle, also on the same team as Matt. And I've been working on React Native for Windows for about 6 months now, and in general do a lot of things with reactive programming. I've done some work on ARX.NET. That's it.
Yeah, so you do in fact have two RX team members as well on the podcast, basically.
I guess we should just start with that, because we have had you on before talking about reactive extensions and stuff. It's like, what's going on with that? Is anything new there? React.js and stuff?
Well, reactive extensions, kind of took a life of its own with Netflix and Google, kind of leading the charge for getting it into Angular 2. So, I'm more along the lines of, committing when I can, more of an advisory role. But that's it's really come down to is, I'm still a core team member, but I'm not the only person, which is kind of nice. On the reactive extensions for .NET, we're working towards the .NET Foundation, so that we have a good, vibrant, open source community around RX.NET. We've come a long, long way for sure. And Eric got to work on that as well as work with Bart as well.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, at first I was like, yeah, I haven't heard that much. And then it's like, sheesh, it is everywhere. Like, it's all over, like you're saying, Angular and React. And then also in, like I was just watching the other day, they're using like reactive extensions and RX UI and stuff inside of the GitHub plugin for Visual Studio and stuff.
It's literally everywhere at GitHub. And what's kind of cool is even Facebook's Nuclei IDE uses it a lot, pretty extensively.
Okay, cool. So the reason we invited you on this week, we were chatting and you were telling me about, the progress on universal Windows apps with React Native. And, I was thinking this would be great to just kind of catch up and talk about, like, first of all, React in general, and then kind of dig into React Native and what you guys are doing with universal Windows apps and stuff.
Sure.
So first of all, for those who, have only heard the buzz and seen the headlines floating by on Hacker News, but have not played with React, what is it?
Well, it really, what they, kind of say on their website is it puts the V or the view in MVC. So it's really more focused on the productivity that you get with a way of doing kind of web components where you have this representation. What they use in JSX, which is their own JavaScript, HTML, XML kind of markup that they use, as well as kind of the component model where you have kind of the full life cycle of creation, initialization, and teardown. And then you have state within each component as well. And then when the state changes, behind the scenes, it does a lot of diffing using a virtual DOM. So instead of direct DOM manipulations, it does a diffing on the virtual DOM and then applies the mass changes when it's ready for moving forward. So it's kind of a different way about thinking about it. Instead of just two-way data binding, it's more along the lines of unidirectional data binding in terms of state changes get sent over to the DOM kind of thing.
From my playing with it, it was one of those things that sounded neat in theory, but there's like no way it could really work as far as like the diffing and the continually updating the DOM. Right. You know, it's like, that sounds so inefficient, but but it all works.
Yes, it does, and it's fairly fast and it's fairly flexible. And what's nice about it is it kind of moves us towards the web component model that, you know, we should be thinking about, you know, in terms of custom controls and so forth, or, you know, custom elements that we've been talking about for gosh knows how long in the HTML world.
Yeah, it's crazy seeing that, like, again, like Angular kind of adopting that as well. It's like, yeah, components exactly. Everywhere.
Exactly. I think everyone was more moving, you know, away from the direct DOM manipulation and the jQuery kind of templates, and more towards something that's more holistic as to be treated as a component kind of thing.
Okay. Now, just while we're talking about that, there's like, components can be good, but you can also pick up a lot of baggage with events and state and all that kind of stuff. And, oh, yeah. And, you know, and then there was kind of a move towards these, like MVC being kind of a simpler pattern or a lighter weight pattern. Is that, uh-huh. Is that not a concern, or how do these new components handle that without making applications complex?
Well, and that was kind of the point of why they introduced things like Flux, such as things like, how do you actually retrieve data? How do you message between components? How do you message back and forth between your front end, back end? All those sorts of things were things that weren't really covered by a V layer that were kind of introduced later after the fact. And then further refine, you know, the Flux architecture was kind of further refined in things like Redux and other tools.
Okay. So that's React in general. So what's React Native?
Yeah. So React Native is basically a way to take all those great paradigms and designs for and developer tools and that whole concept of one-way data binding and allowing you to build apps that target native platforms, in particular, iOS and Android are kind of the core platforms in the existing core React Native project. So it started as a project at Facebook about, I don't know, in the past couple of years, and has basically picked up really great momentum in the open source community. It's got like 33,000 something GitHub stars and I think more than 800 contributors at this point, many of whom are not actually working at Facebook. But yeah, you know, the short and sweet of it is it's just a way to use that whole virtual DOM, one-way data binding, React.js premise for composing UIs on native platforms.
Okay. And there's always, you know, some heated discussion when you talk about using mobile technologies to build native applications. You know, some people will say that's ridiculous and you need to be building native to get, you know, the right kind of performance and all that. What's the kind of overhead or, you know, is this similar to something like Cordova, where I'm kind of running a web browser and web tech that's kind of in a window, or is this more kind of like it's using web technologies to build something that's pretty close to native?
I would say more the former. It's basically a way of allowing JavaScript developers to write apps in a familiar way, I guess, with React.js, but ultimately, in the end, in the Cordova case, you're composing a basically an HTML page, or you know, you're using HTML and a lot of these other web tech stuff, but here it's ultimately translating down into proper native views on the device. But of course, you're right. I mean, there's always going to be an overhead anytime you're building these kinds of abstractions, or you know, sort of layering additional runtimes on top of your native layer. Then yeah, you're going to pay for it.
Okay. Does this mean that I'm pretty constrained as far as what kind of applications I can build, or is the performance good enough where I can, you know, get by with this? Or is that a dumb question?
Well, let me ask a related but somewhat different question, which is why? Why would somebody want to do this? Like, right. You know, they have there's all these great native development tools. What is the compelling advantage of React Native?
I guess one of the key, you know, from my perspective, one of the key advantages of it is this idea that the main logic of your application is running in JavaScript. So it's actually, you know, typically when you're building a native application, your main thread is your UI thread. By switching over to having your main thread being on a JavaScript thread, you can do a lot of other interesting things sort of off of the UI thread. The UI is actually just sort of in many ways an asynchronous background task, and it sort of shifts where the majority of the work, and it has these really nice sort of natural benefits of having that asynchronous model emerge when you're building your applications. But, you know, one of the other things with native platforms or building directly on native platforms is when you ship updates to your app, you're shipping binary code, and an update to a React Native app can oftentimes just be pushing out new JavaScript files. And when you do that, there's a lot of great tools out there like CodePush. And yeah, in particular, I think CodePush is something that came out of Microsoft as well for Cordova. So you guys might be familiar with it from Cordova. But it also works with React Native. And it's a way that you can take your assets, these proper assets of an application, like, you know, HTML and JavaScript files, and push those without going through the whole store process. So yeah, I think.
Yeah. I mean, to build upon that, it's kind of the investments that you make as a development shop. Do you have one developer specialized as a, do you have one as a iOS developer? This one's an Android developer. This one's a UWP or Windows programmer. Or do you focus on, well, everyone pretty much here knows React. Well, when it gets down to it, there's very little knowledge of iOS and Android and even Windows that's actually required to build an app here. You get the same look and feel that you would get from a native app with iOS, Android, and UWP, but you only need to really know one paradigm. And so you get kind of this scaffolding that's handed to you when you create the React Native app. And basically, you can just deploy it almost immediately to three different platforms very, very easily.
Okay, so what's the quick kind of comparison roadmap or matrix or whatever? So we've already got Cordova out there, which is a similar technology. There's also things like Electron, which is web technology, and then building more towards the native code, you've got like Xamarin. So what's the decision matrix of where React Native fits in?
Well, that, I mean, for me, if you're already using React on the web, then it really does make sense that you would continue to use React this time for native platforms. That to me kind of just makes sense. Cordova, like I said, is more of a polyfills environment for the web. And it's, if you know straight up web technologies, then you'll probably do fairly well with Cordova. And there are a lot of really great tools out there as well. So I really wouldn't want to, diss one or the other, whether you're choosing React or you're choosing Cordova. Because both are fairly good, and Cordova especially is a very mature project. But if on the other hand you're a .NET shop and C sharp shop in particular, then or even F sharp for that matter, Xamarin would fit pretty darn nicely for creating your native apps, so that you don't have to refocus them on learning Objective-C or Swift and Android as well as all of the build systems with Xcode or Gradle and Android and so forth.
Okay, so it really is just about like, hey, you can build apps using similar approaches, and it's just all about which web technology kind of fits better with your shop or.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's. I'm sure that people will do performance comparisons and all that, but really, when you're talking about creating an app and a great experience, use what you're familiar with, use what's well supported out there, what has a great community around it, et cetera.
Okay. So you mentioned, different places you can deploy React to. So how does UWP fit into that?
Yeah. So, like I said before, for about the past 6 months or so, we've been working on building the platform extension in order to basically get that core bridge, that core interface that talks to the OS and the core UI framework in integrating with the React Native JavaScript libraries. So that's something that, we've been iterating on and have recently published a couple NPM packages for, which we'll give more detail on.
So what's the approach for that? Like, how do you implement this technically?
So to get started, we basically took a look at how they implemented React Android, because when we were thinking about building it, we had a couple of different options when you're building for UWP. You can use C# and the .NET framework, or you can use C++, CX, both of which have the necessary XAML bindings for the UI and whatnot. So when we looked at React Android, we saw that they were using Java, and that kind of gave us enough confidence to say, they're using two managed approaches, right? Two garbage collectors and all this other stuff. So we said, let's start there and use that architecture as much as possible, and just to get ourselves bootstrapped. And actually, it worked out really well. There were some really great abstractions in there for the core bridge. And the other decision that we had to make was what's going to actually be executing the JavaScript. What's our JavaScript runtime? And for iOS and Android, they each use JavaScript Core. And I think that's for a lot of different reasons. But when we looked at React Native for iOS, I thought one of the great parts of it is that, you know, they use the JavaScript Core library that's available on the device. So they don't ship any extra binaries for the JavaScript runtime. And if we were thinking about that from a UWP approach, you know, all UWP devices ship with Chakra as an option because, you know, we use that for Edge and for WinJS applications. So we said, you know what, let's get this thing running on Chakra. And yeah, we just kind of built from there.
Okay. What's the actual, like, you know, stepping back, let's say I write my application, I deploy it, it's a UWP app. So that means there's a shell that, you know, a UWP shell that fires up, and then it's hosting a browser. So it's a web UWP web view. And then it's running Chakra to execute the JavaScript code. And then it's kind of managing, it's like a VM basically executing my application. Is that conceptually in the ballpark?
Well, not exactly. So that makes sense from that's kind of how Cordova works from the way I understand it. The way it works for React Native is actually, you know, there's no browser involved. We're executing against the JS runtime directly. So there's no sort of interface through Edge or anything like that. Basically, what happens when the app starts up, you create a XAML page and navigate to that XAML page. And there is an initial call that's sent to the JavaScript engine that says, you know, start the application with this name. And then that sends back over the bridge a bunch of operations against the UI manager. And so the UI manager will create additional XAML views, like subviews of that page and whatnot, and sort of coordinate them and call a bunch of, basically construct that UI tree that you've sort of created in the JavaScript space. So on the JavaScript side of things, you have a React virtual DOM that represents what your UI looks like, and that translates into a bunch of these operations that get sent over the bridge to native code, and you know, sort of a native UI tree is created on that.
Okay, so it's completely a native UI tree, meaning I'm not working with a bunch of, there's not HTML in some sort of view. It's a completely XAML-based native UI then.
Exactly.
Okay. And so then as far as, because there's different ways kind of styling applications, and in React, you can do things where you can set styles that it kind of, like the React programming I've done has been, you know, traditional web programming, and you're thinking of CSS for styling. So how do I go about styling, you know, a React Native application, and especially if I want it to run on Android, iOS, and UWP?
So interestingly enough, it still does use a subset of CSS. It actually uses the part of CSS called Flexbox.
Ah.
And there is an open source library out there. I think it was also put out there by a developer at Facebook. And yeah, it's a really useful tool. So you write, you know, inline styles with you know, your flex row and your flex column, and can use all those sort of styling attributes that you would expect.
Yep. And what's kind of also nice is so we ported over the F8 app, which was the Facebook's conference app, and in there it was written so that you could have different styles for different platforms. So you would have kind of a style for Android and a style for Windows and a style for iOS, so that you could apply them conditionally.
Okay. Am I pretty constrained on, like, in the case where you were doing that, did you run into things where you're like, shoot, I would like to style it this way, but I only have this small kind of subset of styles available?
I didn't see us hitting any hard limitations, quite honestly. I think, especially as rich as the application was, we didn't really notice any downsides to that. That's not to say that there isn't any, it's just we haven't run into them yet.
Okay. While we're talking about that, then what was, you know, the most difficult stuff? Was it all like just slam dunk, or were there some difficult things in moving that F8 application?
I think Eric can speak most to that one.
No, I think that part was easy. The in terms of like the styling attributes and things like that, most of that was already in place. There's an open source C# library for Flexbox as well, and it took care of, you know, it was awesome to have that. So, you know, the major blocking points that we would hit is, you know, the common thing that you would hit when you're building any kind of cross-platform app. It's when you reach a point and you say, okay, well, I know how I want this to be designed on Android, but I might not know if I have the same tools available to me on iOS, and likewise for Windows as well. So, you know, there was a lot of backfilling in some missing modules, backfilling in components that were available at the time for Android, just because, you know, Windows is so new. At the time, there really wasn't. It was just the small team of us that was working on it. So, you know, the third party modules that were out there obviously didn't have Windows support and things like that. That was really the challenge, is getting all that work together.
Exactly. And there was one in particular, like the linear gradient stuff, was a third party module, and we needed that in order for some pretty rich background. So we ended up porting it ourselves, basically. And then we kind of identified where we were in terms of you know, feature parity with Android and iOS as well.
What do you do as far as data there? Like, is the F8 application just completely an online kind of browser plus, or are you saving to local storage, or what are you doing there?
Yeah, so the data flow in the F8 app is actually based on Relay, which is a common paradigm for React applications. It's a common way of doing data flow. It's based on Redux, but it ultimately the back end of your data is GraphQL. So that was all sort of built in. The data flow code kind of just came over, and it was one of those experiences where sharing code across platforms was completely seamless. There was nothing we needed to do to sort of integrate with the existing Redux data flow stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that was the beauty of it, is if it's all in JavaScript, unless it's using a native component, it just works.
Okay, cool. So anything else interesting specific to that F8 application or other applications you've ported over, like things that I should be aware of, or is it kind of mostly along that line where if it works, it just works, and then there's just kind of small little, you know, style or support issues?
Well, I think the one thing to mention about React Native is it actually shares some similarities to Xamarin in some way, right? When you read the documentation on Xamarin, unless you're intending to use Xamarin Forms, you sort of immediately understand that, hey, I'm actually building a native UI here, right? Like, I'm using the iOS and Android APIs when I'm building my app. And then the idea is that where I get those sharing points is sort of in the view models and the models of my application and the data flow of my application. And, you know, I think the same applies here. The difference, though, is that React Native sort of, it's not quite to that extreme, right? When you look at Cordova, it's a web view. So it's at one end of the extreme, and it's saying, like, write your app. It'll work across all the platforms. It'll look this way, because it's web and it's great. And then at the other end, there's Xamarin, which is like, you know, let's build your app, make it have a native look and feel, you know, make it real, make it native. Users expect that. So, you know, go and do it that way. But with React Native, there's sort of this, it's like almost a happy medium of, there's some components that are definitely cross-platform, things like text and text input. And you expect that to work the same across iOS, Android, and Windows and all the other new platforms that you can imagine for the framework. But then there are places where, you know, you expect to go and do things in a custom way for the platform. So in the F8 app, we used a split view, which is a sort of a UWP concept to implement some of the menus. And we used a flip view instead of as the sort of carousel approach and, you know, those kind of things. The menu experience and other things that wouldn't necessarily be the same across all three platforms.
Okay. So as it is cross-platform, what's the kind of development experience as far as, like, you have the code, you run it on Windows, you run it on Mac, do you use emulators or things as far, like, what's your day-to-day workflow for testing across, you know, multiple different devices or OSs?
I mostly work off of my Windows machine. So when I'm working across devices, I'm basically working across, you know, Android and Windows. I don't do a lot of Xcode stuff. But yeah, so at any given point in time, I can, you know, pop open an Android emulator. I happen to use the Visual Studio emulators for Android, but I think there's a lot of other good emulators out there as well. And so, yeah, I'll if So for one good example of that is the UI Explorer, which is a really great tool for getting to know the UI components that are core to React Native. What's available there when you're building your application and sort of how do you use it? How do you get access to those APIs and things like that? When I'm adding a new feature to core React Native for Windows, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll pop open the Android emulator, I'll run the UI Explorer, and go from there. So it allows me to kind of iterate more quickly. And in terms of the Windows side of things, you know, UWP means that we can deploy to, you know, emulator device or even desktop, right? So a lot of times my workflow is just get the thing working on desktop first and then start playing around on mobile as well.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I'll use something like Android Studio to build and run things, or Xcode as well, just to make sure that we have a common look and feel, or see how iOS did it versus Android did it, et cetera, in terms of look and feel.
Is there a long kind of compile step between, like, you make some changes? Are you able to work pretty iteratively, or you know, like, is it live, close to a live update experience?
So that was actually another one of the benefits that I kind of wanted to squeeze in earlier about why you would choose React Native for building your applications. And I think Cordova would probably have a similar experience. I haven't played, to be honest with you, I haven't played around with it much, but there are some really great dev tools built into the React Native platform, you know, when you're in debug mode, for picking up changes to the JavaScript live and sort of refreshing your UI. So without a recompile step or anything, it's, you know, at most a couple seconds to see the changes that you've just made. And in addition to that, there's actually built into the developer experience in core React Native is this concept called hot module reloading. So without even a reload step, you can see changes in your application and you haven't lost the state of your modules or anything like that.
Wow.
Yeah. And not only that, but Eric actually went a little bit further and actually implemented, so you get the full Chrome debugging experience that you can easily see what the JavaScript code is doing. And not only that, but you can inspect individual elements, look at their styles, etc.
Yeah, so I can't take a ton of credit for that because a lot of that is built into the core JavaScript library for React Native, but it was something that we did ensure that was part of the developer experience for Windows as well, because it's something that React Native developers have come to sort of know and expect when they're doing when they're building their apps.
So as you're working as a developer locally, like, you get all that kind of, like you're saying, hot module reloading, all the developer tools and all that stuff's relatively, is very interactive. And then you go through some sort of like, okay, I'm ready to release this, and you then run through and package it and publish your updates to the stores. Is that, you end up with kind of an output package for each one?
Each individual thing that's built in directly to React Native, such as iOS and Android, they have specific ones that says run Android or run Windows. Run Android, run iOS, and from that we'll actually create the packages to do that. Otherwise, you can go directly into Android Studio, package everything up. But that doesn't necessarily, do all the heavy lifting of the publishing for you. You still have to kind of do that manually yourself.
So as far as, getting started with this, like, I ran through, Eric, your blog post, and pretty straightforward as far as you run NPM, you install RNPM. Actually, can you explain what RNPM is?
Yeah, so RNPM is a tool that was built by a couple of React Native core contributors, and they noticed that sort of one of the pain points of React Native, it wasn't even that much of a pain point, but I guess the part where you have to sort of step away from JavaScript development and sort of get your hands dirty, if you will, with native development is when you're including third-party modules to React Native. So what they did was they built RNPM basically to put out this tool called Link. And what Link will do is it'll install third-party modules from NPM, and it will update your native code base with all the proper hooks in order to get access to that in JavaScript. So it's a very seamless experience for importing dependencies into your React Native apps. And when they did that, they actually were clever enough to build that in a very nice modular way for including additional things to the RNPM command line. So that was basically, we thought that was a great hook. We knew that a lot of React Native developers were already using that tool, and there's some plans for that tool to actually get integrated into the core React Native CLI anyway. So yeah, we use that as sort of our command line architecture for introducing new plugins. So
Yeah, exactly. So all of our bootstrapping that you did when you did RNPM Windows, basically that was calling in through an RNPM plugin, which basically went ahead and created the entire scaffolding for you.
Okay. And so I did that, and I popped the code open. I've got this Welcome to React Native, and I see in there there's the index.android.js, index.ios.js, and then index.windows.js. And the thing I'm seeing, number one, it's all very, very similar, which is cool. But on the other hand, that makes me wonder, is it possible to kind of, instead of having whatever.ios, whatever.windows, like, can I consolidate for things that are similar more, or do I really end up kind of having three copies of each React view?
No, I mean, by all means, you definitely can have, JS files that are not platform specific. The reason, the idea is that generally speaking, 99.9% of apps that you're ever going to build are going to need a separate entry point per platform. So that's why you generate an index.windows, index.ios, index.android, et cetera. But if you're building the data flow of your application, you wouldn't modify that with a platform specific aspect. And there's a lot of really interesting views that you can kind of build up just using the Flexbox algorithm, images, text, all these core components that are available for React Native. And so you can use those and build those up in a way that they wouldn't be platform specific, and import those in the same way that you would imagine you import any, you sort of use the same require statements and what.
Okay. And then as far as like what's covered as far as like what kind of controls or things, like you've got, views, text, image, you've got them listed in your blog post as well. If I want to add in additional things, is it relatively easy for me to create other platform specific controls?
Actually, I think I'll let Matt take that because he recently put up some great documentation for the extensibility points for React Native.
Yeah, there are kind of two different things that you can do. One would be like a native module. So, for example, if I wanted to add in toasts or vibration or whatever kind of module that you can do in there, we have very detailed instructions in there on how you first inherit from a certain class, you implement certain properties. Then you list it with the main module under kind of the main module's entry point to say this is another module that I want to expose, and then in the JavaScript then you go ahead and register that as well, and you say, oh, okay, now I've got my native module. And the same even goes for components, so like a different view or something like an image viewer kind of thing. Instead of putting it into the modules area, you'd put it into the create views kind of. I don't remember the exact method name, but it was basically create view managers or something akin to that, where you are going ahead and just registering it basically on a per module basis. So when you want to ship a particular plugin or something like that to React Native, you can have a number of modules and views as well, or UI components, as it were.
Okay.
So it's very, very easy to do. So we've got some really nice documentation on our GitHub repo for that. So yeah, it's a lot simpler than you think it is.
All right. So I go through, I'm using RNPM and et cetera. I scaffold an application. What do I do as far as building, running the application?
Funny you should mention that. I'm actually working on that right now, and the fact that what we do is we just basically will read in from the command line a number of the things that you want to do, such as I want to deploy it to this device, whether it's Windows, desktop, a specific phone, etc., as well as your build architecture and so forth. And then what we'll do is we'll call, basically do a NuGet restore, make sure you've got the Windows 10 SDK all lined up, and then we'll build it for you, create the apex for you, then deploy it to the given device. So, quite honestly, for right now, what we say is Visual Studio is required, but in the future, that won't necessarily be the case if we just do everything through MS Build and allow you to do everything through Visual Studio Code if you wanted to, or WebStorm or whatever.
Is there some potential place where you could get to where you could build you know, completely build and create an application completely on Mac or Linux, you know, with like a UWP app? Or are you kind of always going to need, you know, because of the Windows SDK and components?
Yeah, you're always going to need Windows in this particular case because of the SDKs that are required.
Okay.
Well, I would call out one other thing, though, because there is this really great tool out there, this great service. It's called RNPlay, or React Native Playground, and it's at rnplay.org. And what they have there is it's basically a prototype space for you to, you know, sort of write your JavaScript and see that running on Android and iOS. And we'd love to, you know, have the same sort of support for Windows at some point. And we do plan on reaching out to those guys as well to sort of make that happen. So hopefully, you know, you can write your React Native apps or prototype your React Native apps in your browser and sort of see those running on a device through your browser as well.
Oh, cool. Okay. Let me see. So what are some examples of, are people actually using this? Are there, like you mentioned, that F8 application, are there other kind of applications people have built already with this?
Not yet, no. We're still trying to make sure we've got the spit and polish on everything, you know, to try and create that great dev experience before we, you know, start heavily onboarding something. But, you know, by all means, if anyone who's listening to this has a great idea for an app or is already using it for Android and iOS and wants to try it out for Windows, please do let us know.
Yeah, that was my next question, is what about React Native in general? Are you aware of some kind of, you know, top applications that people are building there?
They do have a showcase on the React Native site where basically they have a bunch of apps that they believe, you know, are the featured really best in breed of the particular apps that they have. And then they have just, you know, a general listing of all of the others. And it would be interesting to see a lot of those show some interest in Windows. I think especially, you know, Facebook has a few of them as well.
And then as far as what you can build UWP wise, like part of the appeal of UWP, or I guess most of a lot of the appeal of UWP, is that you can build, you know, phone, desktop, you know, potentially like Xbox or HoloLens or whatever. Like, is that something where you've worked with building applications that are, you know, working on different screen sizes?
Yeah, I mean, we've done some work actually at F8. We were at F8 and were able participated in partnership with the Facebook open source team to do a couple demos. We had a very simple React Native demo running on Xbox. We had things running on we had the F8 app running on a mobile device, but then hooked up to Continuum, which allowed you to sort of launch that mobile device and or that mobile app in desktop mode. But yeah, so at this point, you know, really the only playgrounds that we've sort of tried out have been Xbox, desktop, and mobile. But yeah, we're definitely keen on looking into, you know, IoT and HoloLens as well.
Yep.
And what's the potential for, like, could I have a React web app that I, you know, and also deploy it to native? Like, and apologies if you've called that out as a feature before. I'm not totally clear on if I can have both, like if I can leverage React code in a web application and, you know, in React Native applications.
So at React.js Conf this year, I did actually see a lightning talk on possibly bringing a platform for web so that you could take your React Native apps and target them to web. And I think there's some people out there that are working on that. But in terms of the flip side of bringing your React web app to React Native, there's definitely going to be some sharing points there of code, possibly like your data flow and, you know, data models and things like that, that are certainly going to be portable over to the native space. But in terms of views, you're definitely going to have to sort of rework those. The great thing, though, is that, you know, if you know how to build a web app with React, then I can almost guarantee you know how to build a mobile app with React as well.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So from that point of view, you've got React Native and just multiple targets. You're going to iOS, Android, UWP, and then throw web in there as well, potentially. Is that kind of the...
Yeah. And then actually, I know that Samsung is working on a Tizen platform as well, which is great. And, you know, there's some community members out there who are working on bringing React Native to OS X desktop. And so there's a lot of interesting platforms that are popping up for this framework.
What about, you know, there's a bunch of different new, you know, web tech, JavaScript things popping up all the time. Is this something like, is this a science project? Is this something that you think is going to be around for a while? Like, is this something that, like, you know, like the UWP work you guys are doing, is that something that's going to be ongoing?
I think it's going to largely be sort of community and demand driven, right? We'll see sort of how it plays out. You know, if there's interest and people are wanting to build apps, then, you know, I think we're obviously going to continue to have, you know, the support from our team to sort of keep this going.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is our intention to, you know, to keep up with the releases that React puts out and stuff like that. And, you know, we would love to have the community involved. In fact, you know, we have on our issues list kind of a list of help wanted kind of thing. You know, if you want to implement this or that to get 100% parity, you know, the lower priority things, we're more than willing and able to take some of those and bring them in. So, you know, trying to build a community around this is definitely something that we want to do.
Yeah, I mean, just for like transparency, by all means, we're not going to scale to the, I think there's something like 500 different third-party modules or something like that that are available for React Native that people have been putting out there. So, you know, we don't scale to making sure that all those things work on Windows. So it's, you know, the success of the platform comes down to how active and involved the community can be.
Absolutely.
Sure. Okay. So I think we talked about most of the tools. We talked, you know, we talked about Visual Studio. We talked about command line. Does Visual Studio Code have anything for this?
So yeah, with Visual Studio Code, we're working closely with the Visual Studio team. In fact, that you know the people that we've already mentioned on for doing code push, they've also got a React Native plugin so that you can deploy your apps to iOS and Android. And we're hoping in the relatively near future that we get full UWP parity so we can easily deploy to a UWP device as well. So you get that. So you've got all the command line interop that you might possibly want as well with code. So it's a great environment overall for doing it.
Right. And it can also, like, so Matt had also mentioned the Chrome debugger experience for sort of remotely debugging your JS. So Visual Studio Code can also operate as your remote debugger as well. And you can set breakpoints and step through and watch and catch your stack trace and all that other stuff. So it's a really great tool for development.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's the testing story for this stuff? Like, you know, you want to write unit tests, you want to write integration tests. How does that work in the React Native world?
So, yeah, I mean, that brings up a great point in that, you know, testing obviously gets a lot more complicated when you're working across two different runtimes. And, you know, maybe you have a mixed bag of building native modules and then also sort of layering on JavaScript modules and things like that. So, yeah, I think it's very similar to building any sort of cross, like a large stack application, right, where you have a service and a client and things like that, where you have integration tests between your JavaScript libraries and your native code. You obviously have a lot of unit tests on your native side for the core modules that you're building and whatnot. And then you can use tools like Jest for testing your pure JavaScript components. And there's some, I think Jest has some pretty great mocking tools and whatnot as well. So yeah, I think there's a lot of tools out there for doing this.
And with UWP, it's basically we've got our own unit tests using Visual Studio to test it. But and obviously, they, you know, for Android and iOS, they have their own kind of thing. So, you know, it'd be nice that we would ship them kind of a shell and said, hey, write your unit tests too, and perhaps we'll get there.
So what's the, you know, if you're interested in this, what's the best way to get started? I mean, obviously, Eric, your recent blog post, we'll have that listed in the show notes, and then also the documentation that you called out that Matt's been working on. Anything else? Is there any, you know, big presentations or tutorials or anything you'd like to make sure people know about?
Yeah, well, I think the React Native documentation in general is really good. So, you know, just getting started, if you're not familiar with React, visit that documentation, run through that, get an idea of the virtual DOM and one-way data binding. A lot of that you don't even need to understand sort of deeply in order to start building your apps, but it is really handy to kind of get an idea of how that works. But yeah, the GitHub documentation is really good for the React Native and the React project.
Yep, and they actively take community contributions there as well, which is really kind of nice. And and for us, we're working on improving our documentation. So if you want to go beyond the very basics of creating modules and so forth, if there are more Windows specific stuff, we'll definitely provide that or work with the community to get that done.
All right, cool. Is there anything else that I didn't cover yet, or that you'd like to throw in? Any last thoughts?
Oh no, it's been great. We've gotten some great, we got obviously some great publicity at F8 for a lot of our work, and we're really excited that that the community is at a whole very excited about this possibility of writing React Native for UWP. You know, you'd think that some people are like, oh God, not another choice of now I have to pick between doing Native to Cordova to native script to Xamarin to anything else, but no, instead we've gotten a very good response to this particular project, insofar that we got we've got a good number of followers on our Twitter account, and we're keeping that up to date, trying to highlight things that are going on. And what we'd like to do, obviously is in the future, when people start actually building apps, is work more collaboratively with them and highlight their work. So yes, follow React Windows.
Cool. Okay. Well, I think that about wraps it up then. Thanks a lot for your time. This is really interesting, and I've got an open application sitting on my desktop from running through this, so I'll be spinning it up.
Very cool.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Catch up with you again soon on Herding Code. Music plays. Okay.